Hey, welcome to the Out of Spec podcast. I'm joined by Kyle Connor, Mike Breeling, and we have a special guest. Say hi, Forrest.
Hello. Or actually, hey, what's up, guys? Right behind me is...
tonight, Kyle fondly remembers his time with the 2022 Golf R. We discuss our EV crossover shootout and many other fun cars we've all been behind the wheels of. And much, much more. So let's jump right in. I did want to mention, I am starting with my drive up here, I started my leg of my next Miata trip. So I did 5,000 miles out east. Now I'm doing 4,000-ish miles out west. Maybe 5,000 miles, since it's going to take like a month. So I will see you, Forrest, in like a week. Here's my trunk. So, oh, wait. And here's my glove box with
snacks. Is that Ralph Lauren? Ralph Lauren suitcase.
Yeah.
Wow. Ross, good eye.
$20.
We're trying to figure out what that was. I was like, "What is that?" Like, and then I realized it was a dude playing polo.
It looks like he brought a lot of stuff, but then we have to realize it's a Miata, so there's actually nothing in there.
Yeah. Well, yes. You can see there 7 hats on the left side.
Dude, I was just about to comment on that. Like,
what else do you need? I got running shoes, a DJI drone, and 7 hats. I'm ready for 3.5 weeks on the road. So yeah, should be a fun trip. Me and Kyle are going to rip the Miata in some canyons and just have a blast. So
let's just be honest here. Just merging onto the highway or driving slowly means wide open throttle in that car.
Yeah. But it will be fun to see how you compare it to, cause we just did a video on Out of Spec Reviews of you driving in Colorado canyons in the Miata at like 6,000-7,000 feet. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to do it closer to sea level. Not exactly. We'll still be in the
mountains. By the time you get at the top of Angeles Crest, you'll be 7,000 feet.
No power again. Yeah. And then something else I drove I wanted to mention was the Mini Cooper JCW. So this was actually my first Mini experience.
I'd never
been behind the wheel of a Mini until this car. And first impressions, great power. I love the turbo. Made me want to turbo my Miata. But I was like immediately annoyed by the rev hang. Otherwise, it was decent though.
I totally disagree with you. This car has gotten so bad over time. I am a real Mini enthusiast. Mike can attest to this. I've owned 6 Minis, JCW GPs, all the hot stuff, tuned them up. Mike's a Mini enthusiast, had, you know, Minis as well. And we've spent a lot of time in our Minis on back roads. And Mike, you actually owned this generation car, an F56 Cooper S, but it had the JCW tuning kit, which gave it a great exhaust and pop pops and like power. And the pop pops are gone for 22 altogether.
Really?
No pop pops.
They got rid, like, there's no cool exhaust or anything
you
on
get
it?
In the new Golf R, and it's pop, 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 war zone behind you. And, you know, and then I guess Mini can't figure out emissions, and so no pop pops.
This was depressingly quiet. Like, I had windows down in the canyon, still could not hear my own
exhaust. All piped in audio, because if you put the car in green mode, efficient mode, and drive it wide open throttle, you hear literally nothing, and there's no valved exhaust. So, first off, noise was bad. Steering on all F56s are a little weird. I think you can attest to that too, Mike. They're a little rubbery. And like, I don't know if it's where they actually put the steering rack, but it's just always a bit awkward, you know, for the first little bit driving these cars. And yeah, you mentioned the rev hang on this thing. It's like, even with ESP fully off, it disables auto rev matching, which is great because I hate that. And but like, it's not a driver's car anymore. I'm like, I feel like when I was an R56 Mini owner, all of the R53, the supercharged guys were like, that's a piece of crap. No one wants to drive that. It's a BMW. And I'm like, no, this is really fun. And here I am doing the same thing for the next generation Mini. But I'm pretty disappointed with what Mini's done.
Yeah.
Hey, Kyle, have you drove the new GP?
I have not had a go in the new – actually, that's not true. I have driven the new GP, but not hard on a back road.
Okay. I got to take it – I don't know if you know where Ortega Canyon is, but there's a – or Ortega Highway. But there's like a pretty crazy bit of like canyon road near me called Ortega Highway. Mm-hmm. I took the new GP out there, and it's weird, man. Like
– and it's automatic only.
Yes. DCT.
It's not even a DCT.
No,
DCT. Oh, it's not. That's right. It's not.
Like a, it's just like a torque converted auto.
Right. It has the ASIN 8-speed auto, not even a ZF auto that the BMWs get.
Yeah, no. So the shifts kind of like big, they like bleed together. So like when you shift, it's like, I guess you can say it's fast. You don't feel it shift. It just kind of falls into the next gear. But
yeah, but the downshifts, well, from what I noticed, were like downshift paddle. It just like took forever and it wouldn't get into the gear. And I just put it away after driving around the block.
Yeah, it doesn't blip it at all. It's crazy fast, but it also rides hard as I don't even know what, dude. It rides.
Yeah, but that's so what my old one did too.
Yeah, Kyle's used to that in minis.
Yeah, yeah, dude. And the crazy part is like I feel like that exhaust is probably no louder than the JCW. It's
probably the same unit. Quiet. Yeah. I just think minis losing their touch. You know, the decision to go automatic only, from when I was speaking to some engineers, was twofold. One, Chinese market, they can't drive manual transmissions in China. Apparently, it's just not a thing. So it has to be automatic to sell the car. And I'm like, okay, we'll just make it automatic version for China only. And then number two was, you know, when they put the hot tune on that B46, B48 four-cylinder motor, they got it up to 300 horsepower. Ours had, it's still here. It's 226 horsepower, I think. And so it's just so much torque and power that the clutch can't handle it. Meanwhile, I know like 50 people that are making 350 plus horsepower with their F56 manuals, and they're holding up just fine. So,
well, Kyle, what's funny is I'm pretty sure in my Cooper S that I owned, my 2017 with the JCW tuning kit, which is a tuning kit you buy from Mini, I feel like my car was actually faster than a factory JCW.
Totally agree. And it sounded cool.
It sounded amazing.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like I said, I love Mini. I've been a Mini enthusiast forever. It was my first car. It was, you know, really getting involved with the company early on. It's what got me into driving performance, because they really are great driving cars. And then getting in this new one, it's just like, this is the JCW, and it drives worse than I would imagine the Cooper would. So, just pretty disappointed.
I think the SE Mini Cooper is the best driving one they have right now, to be honest.
Agreed.
Yes. 100%. So,
crazy.
Speaking of SE Mini Coopers, I'm actually picking mine up tomorrow that I ordered in August.
Oh, nice, dude.
Picking it up tomorrow.
That's cool.
So. I'll have pictures of it next week because the salesman sent me some, but they're not really like great quality. So I was like, I'll take my own.
Mike, yeah. Can we get the coilovers, the factory F56 coilovers on that car and some nice meaty wheels and make it look
probably cool again? There are people, I've seen pictures of SE Coopers that have been lowered already and they look really good.
Because they come with a lift to give the battery more room, but it looks terrible.
Yeah, they sit a couple inches taller, I think.
Nice. Yeah,
but we plan on playing around with it a little bit. But yep, super excited because I agree with Forrest. That is probably the best Mini you can buy right now.
Yep.
Dude, yeah, especially for the money, you know.
For the money, it's awesome.
Yeah, because does it do the full federal tax credit or no?
Full tax credit.
$7,500, and then that's one of the reasons why I bought it. And it's just, you know, one of the cheapest EVs you can buy. That's still fun, has really cool options in it, like good build quality. I know that they've updated that a lot. And you guys with your new 22 JCW that's, you know, on media car over there, their whole like infotainment's a little different now. It's got a new skin on it, basically.
Yeah, but I think ours has a glitchy infotainment. I don't think it fills the whole screen where the infotainment's going to go. You'll have to take a picture of yours because there's like an area that's the screen inside of the circle thing, right? Mm-hmm. Which used to be the speedometer. And now like – where the display is, it's like ours is thinking it's the small screen, so it's just projecting the small image on, but the screen itself is larger, so it looks weird to me.
That's weird. Might be some kind of glitch.
I think it's just a glitch that no one's noticed. Also, because it's a media car and it's a manual transmission, the clutch is gone at 4,000.
But
Forrest can attest to this, but every journalist doesn't know how to drive.
I'll be having some weird clutch issues in pretty much every manual, and I'm just like, dude. The worst was I got a Veloster in manual, and that clutch was destroyed, dude. I was like, I can't do any kind of smooth shifting. I was with one of my buddies, like, dude, I promise I'm a good driver. I was like, I swear this clutch is just completely gone, like worn to nothing.
Yeah, that's because – so we did like one of these driving experiences here with like all the journalists came to one place, and this Mini was a part of it. And I heard all day, was like, oh, just people. And this is one of those cars you don't even need the throttle to get it to move. You just roll off the clutch and it comes with throttle. And so, oh, this is why car enthusiasts, you know, half of journalists, and I'll just be totally transparent here, half the journalists just want to regurgitate the press release with the least amount of effort and get flown everywhere first class to eat all the good food. The other half are true driving enthusiasts that want manual transmissions in the fleet, that want to, you know, say, you know, really keep these fun cars around. Problem is, it's really hard for automakers to keep these spicy cars in the fleets because they just get destroyed from people not understanding how to drive them. So, you know, it's more of a numbers game, and writing and driving skills don't always correlate so much.
Yeah.
This is true. So it's especially true for manual transmissions. I feel like I'm slight autos are pretty much fine across the board when I get them, but.
Yep.
So the manuals, which is sad because there's not a lot of the manuals, especially when it's a good one. And then you get it and you're like,
unless you're the first to get it.
Yeah. I'm on 50% clutch.
Yeah. This one's got flywheel chatter and the whole clutch pedal is creaking. And
it sounds so bad.
I know, it's really destroyed.
That's sad.
That's okay. We've done a couple launches. It still grabs hard. It's just not so smooth. Anyway, sorry to derail.
No. Yeah. So the Mini was not your favorite hot hatch, but what was maybe was the Golf R, right? Oof. Like that was one of your favorite cars maybe of the year. I mean,
so have you driven the Golf R yet, Forrest?
No, I'm super excited to though.
Okay, let me set the stage. The last Golf R would put you to sleep driving it as fast as you can.
Yes.
Super numb, no steering feel. This one also doesn't have any steering feel, but you know, just like you would turn the wheel and you would just go straight everywhere, super understeery. You know, is that Haldex all-wheel drive system? This, I believe, Haldex is just gone in the new one, and it's their whole new architecture. It also has a mechanical torque vectoring rear differential that uses clutch packs, but it's a wet clutch, so it doesn't really overheat ever. It's the same torque vectoring box that's in the RS3. Which isn't in the US yet, but I got to sample in Italy and I got to drive the RS3 hatch, which is like one of my dream cars that will never come here as Forbidden Fruit turbo five-cylinder. 25 years, they'll be one of the drivers. And I think you can even get it with a manual too, which is just the car. But Golf R is, 310 horsepower, something like this, four-cylinder turbo. Of course, it's the EA 888 that they've put in every four-cylinder Volkswagen Group product. Same engine that's in my mom's Macan. But like, you know, real hot tune on this thing. There's a Nürburgring race mode that like puts the rear diff in full, you know, crazy mode. And then there's also a drift mode, which I did try, but it was a little bit grippy. And so I thought Nürburgring mode was the best for a back road. And if you go to our brand new channel called POV Motoring, you'll just watch me allegedly, no face, they can't sue me, I don't think, just bombing this thing down a back road. And it is an incredible car, great balance, just loves to be rung out to the limiter. The limiter, I think, it's at 6,500. It really should be at 7, but it's bop, 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 bop. It's a great limiter. And so it's very intoxicating just to leave it in second and rev it all the way out. Amazing roads too in west of Asheville, North Carolina. Mike, you were just there this week and I missed you by a couple days.
I know.
And you got to see some of the cars, or Ben did, heading out from that event. But crazy car. I drove the GTI and the R back to back. The R is the car for me. Ultimate Colorado car and value for money, $43,000. You get heads up display, heated and cooled seats. I actually like the new Volkswagen infotainment. No one else seems to, but I think it's good. Maybe because I'm used to it from ID4, but great car. Really is. I would buy one in a heartbeat if I didn't have a YouTube channel and didn't have to produce electric car content. If only our audience liked proper cars.
That's interesting. Yeah, dude. When did you make this like massive shift to EVs? I remember seeing you review stuff and then all of a sudden it's like, I saw you reviewing nothing but EVs. Now you're like the EV guy.
I know. Well, this is
you and Bjorn.
Bjorn Nyland in Norway.
Yeah, you're like the American version of him.
Yeah, well, we get this a lot. I guess it was just a pure business move at that point. We were like, okay, I understand electric cars, which not many people did at the time, especially a few years ago.
Yeah.
So it was ahead of the curve. I was able to provide a unique perspective that was nerdy and like to do accurate testing, which not even the big magazines were able to do at that time. Now they're getting there, sort of as expected. And so it was just, let's just, you know, there's only one way to get into this business and grow, which is, you know, you just need numbers first. So we just built all of our numbers up with electric content. Mm-hmm. And part of that's amazing, right? We're at the forefront of the revolution. Whenever an EV launches or whenever a, you know, someone's looking for electric content, we have the videos there. They perform really well. And we've really built the company off of this. But as a driving enthusiast, I prefer, you know, three pedals, cars that are really fun to drive. And so now that we've really established ourselves in the EV space, it's a little bit of walking ourselves back, not necessarily to cover EVs less, but to cover the entire automotive landscape more broadly.
Gotcha. Okay, so here's my question for you, Kyle. You've driven tons of EVs, and so like same situation with me. Like I love car enthusiast cars, right? But I also love EVs because there's just such a unique factor with them that you can't get out of a gas car. And I think there's a win-win with both. So if you had to choose the most car enthusiast like EV, what would it be? I think I have my answer. I want to know yours.
Okay. I'm really curious about yours. and Jordan and Mike, think of yours too, because you both have driven a lot of cars. So for me, what I want out of a car as a driving enthusiast is something, you know, first off, it has to do the basics of an EV. It has to charge well. It has to accelerate well. It has to be a highway cruiser too, because I do a lot of that. But then at the same time, it needs this dichotomy of it's got to shred up a back road, which means like almost nothing is going to, you know, keep up with this thing when we're shredding up a back road. And honestly, it's between two cars for me. I own one now. It's a Model 3 Performance because it's just great charging network and crazy fast in drift mode. I mean, Mike, you've been around with me in the track of that thing. It's sideways at 120 miles an hour, and you know it does that really well. On the other side, I've sort of lost my love for it. And, you know, I've owned a couple in a row, and I'm just kind of over the Tesla thing personally, as from an ownership perspective. Not because I don't think the cars are good, just because I'm kind of
you need something new.
I've just been driving them for so long. Yeah, so that actually leaves, you know, what I have on order now, which is the Taycan, soon to be, I won't say anything, a Taycan variant that might or might not launch in the near future is what I'm going to be going for, but also maybe even Polestar 2.
That's after, a wild card.
After ripping that car up the back road this past weekend, it was allegedly like triple digit entry speed into corners, which was just insanely crazy fast, and great thermal management and amazing braking performance. And like that car was really good. It's just fast, but not fun. So yeah, for me, probably Taycan's the answer. What do you think, Forrest?
So I would say, man, honestly, there's really three. Now that I think about it, there's three that stood out to me the most. I think from a value proposition, I would probably say Model 3 Performance. From like what you get for the money. Close to that, once again, from like value proposition. I mean, honestly, number one is Taycan. I mean, just because it's Porsche. It's Porsche, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
they do their thing really well. But one that surprised me lately was the Mach-E GT.
Me too.
And but it had to be the one with the MagnaRide. The one without it was way too bumpy.
The one without it was garbage. And the standard car is garbage, honestly, from a performance driving standpoint. And so we have this video going up by the time this podcast goes up, which we'll talk about, which is this whole SUV comparison thing. And in the performance segment, the Mach-E came last because it was so terrible to drive, and it was just an E4X. It wasn't a GT. And I think you and I were both on the same launch, not the same day, but we got to drive the performance edition and the non-performance. Did you get to do that, Forrest?
Yes. I came like the day after you did, because I saw your name.
Yeah.
You were supposed to be there the same day I was. And I was like asking them, I was like, is Kyle here? And they're like, no, he like happened to be in town. And so he came the day before.
Right. And so I thought on those roads, everything, that GT Performance was a monster car. With the Magna Ride. And I actually like the car driving slowly as well. The problem with Mach-E, though, is if you drive it hard for like 5 minutes, it overheats. Mm-hmm. Goes into turtle mode.
See, that's the thing is you have – like the moment you get in it, you have to – did you put it in that whole like new – what's it called?
Unbridled extend.
Extend. So it has to be in that mode. But the weird part is when you're in that mode, it actually takes away a lot of top-end power.
Yes.
Like very noticeable amount.
Yeah. Do you want the reason as to why? Because I can give you the like – here's why. Mustang Mach-E is really compromised from a thermal perspective, which affects its charging performance and power output. And so we just ran an article on Inside EVs about this. If you actually look at the cooling systems on Mach-E, they just don't have enough cooling channels to the battery pack. So it's not necessarily that it's thermal throttling, but it's preventing future overheating, which is not the correct way to do it, in my opinion. And so unbridled extend, in theory, is – when you drive an EV hard in a straight line, if you're doing, laps, you're going to toast your stator and your motor really quick. So rotor and stator will go, then your inverters will go, and then your battery pack will get hot. You know, the battery pack's 1,200 pounds of thermal mass that takes forever to heat up and cool down. So it's not that you're overheating your battery; it's the ancillary components first. So the idea of unbridled extend is you take the ancillary components and you pull these down, so that the entire system and subsystems will heat up to maximum temperature at the same time. So it basically pulls you down to where you're heating up as fast as your slowest link, if that makes sense. The problem with that is if you drive the car hard first and then try to go into unbridled extend, which I think you were alluding to, Forrest, you're already over the temperature limit allowed by the inverters and stators. So the car locks you out, which is not the way to do a performance driving mode. They should do it like Tesla, which is, I'm going to drive really fast, so you try and keep yourself as cool as possible. Just run everything maxed out cold. And if you overheat then, fine. That's how I would do it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, it doesn't take much for it to do that, because I noticed
– two pulls.
As soon as I got into the car, I turned it on, turned it off, because I was like, I'm going to turn it off and just turn it on when I get to the back road. Like right when we left the hotel, right? So the moment I got on the highway, I go to try to turn it on. It's already grayed out. Like the moment I got on the highway, like I'm going like 70 for like 10 seconds. Yep. And it's already above the limit.
Yeah, because you merged up to speed. So the way Ford does its calculations there is, I can't remember the exact terminology they used, but essentially it's calculating the amount of current that's flown in and out of the battery pack over a period of time. And if you exceed that limit, then it no longer lets you into this mode. Anyway, the problem with Mach-E is it just has crazy thermal issues. Now, it's something you'll never run into in the real world in daily driving. Yeah. But it's as soon as you take it up a back road, does it just fall on its face? It's really quite a sad situation, actually. Yeah. Because it's such a great car in every other respect, I think.
I mean, it's amazing the dichotomy between like Mach-E owners who are performance car enthusiasts versus,
which is like zero of them.
Yeah. So like those are the ones complaining versus most people are like, this is the greatest car ever.
So even our friends this weekend, I tried to explain it to them. They're like, we've never run into it. I'm like, okay, do you want me to show you what it's like to drive your car hard? Like, let's go.
That's crazy, dude. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay.
So what other EVs have you driven recently, Forrest?
I'm gonna have to check.
So you've done Taycan, right?
I've done Taycan. I did Cross Turismo like a long time ago, like when they first had this small like launch, but it was a German spec.
Right. Did you drive the pink car or the blue car?
It was, I don't even know, dude. Let me see.
Well, they had two different.
Or was it the camo one?
It was not the pink one.
Oh, the pink one wasn't even a Cross Turismo. I'm sorry. That was rear-wheel drive when they
said. Yeah, that was rear-wheel. It was – let me see if I can find it.
Arrow wheels. Wow. It was on the unpainted Arrow wheels. It was pink with a blueberry interior. And frozen berry over blueberry? Raspberry?
That sounds like a
– it's something like that.
Theme.
It was a great – it had a purple steering wheel. I was so into it.
What the heck?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't – it was like a base spec. It wasn't even like a 4S. It was like a 4. Yeah, it was like a Cross Turismo 4.
So, you need to get a Turbo S Cross Turismo. They, you know, in LA, there's this, you know, Calvin at Porsche. Have you spoken to Calvin?
Oh, yeah. He's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, Calvin's the best. I love Calvin. And Calvin and I went off-roading in Taycans recently.
Can you see that?
Yeah, it's crazy. but Calvin spec'd the ultimate Taycan like test car, which is Taycan 4S, which is like kind of okay. But then 21-inch wheels, carbon ceramic brakes, Mamba green exterior.
That's the color.
And it's just an insane spec. And that one's out in California, so you got to get that one.
Kyle told me to get the Mamba green spec.
Yes.
You got to get the Mamba green Taycan.
I mean, that's what I built in the configurator was a Taycan Cross Turismo 4S with Mamba green, everything. And then I saw the price tag, and I was like, wow.
It just won Motor One's, that exact car just won Motor One's car of the year, their editorial pick.
Dude, I think the 4S, at least in Cross Turismo form, makes the most sense.
Yep.
I don't think the Turbo,
I agree.
Turbo is like, I think for that car, it's a little bit overkill. I think, at least for what it's built for.
Well, when you factor in price, like it, there's like a $40,000 gap to go from 4 to Turbo or 4S to Turbo. And at that point, I would just buy a 997 Carrera 2S, you know, and have like a nice weekend toy.
Yeah,
good luck,
Cross Turismo.
Yeah, man, I think the 4S is plenty fast, and it's a good balance between performance and range because you're still getting that good like handling characteristic, you know, like it's across the board. So
what do you think about Rivian?
Oh, dude, I was just telling Jordan. So I'm supposed to get one within the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Hell yeah.
Supposed to get an R1T.
How have they been with communication with you, by the way? You know, not to like break open anything, but like, are they overly communicative or are they a little bit sporadic in their communications?
Sporadic, for sure.
Yeah, same with us.
Yeah, very, very sporadic. But I mean, it makes more sense for them, I guess, because as far as I know, they're the newest company with a PR team.
Yeah, them and Lucid are the only two.
Yeah, and Lucid is a little bit better. Lucid is definitely more responsive. But then again, from what I know, it seems that Rivian is actually doing more deliveries. I may be incorrect, but...
Yeah, but I think mostly internal deliveries.
Yes.
Rivian. Yeah, a lot of employees.
Most of their deliveries have been employees. And I think some of their communication with Rivian might also have to do with the fact that they IPO tomorrow, I think.
Yes.
For the next
after
day.
Their IPO.
So they're trying to keep a lot of stuff close, I think. You know,
they just uploaded new photos to their media site a couple hours ago, and they look incredible. And they're all here in Colorado. It looks awesome.
So sick, dude. I just watched Edmund's video on it today. Have you seen it?
Yeah, we just pulled it up right before the podcast. We haven't watched it yet.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I haven't watched it yet either. I haven't pulled up too.
It's pretty solid. There's one claim that they made. That was pretty interesting, but I won't ruin it.
Okay, don't ruin it then.
No, we should have watched it now.
But do you think this is going to be purchased more by people here in Colorado that will actually be adventuring with them? Which we'll see a ton in LA basically that are like overlanded out. Like the new Defenders are everywhere in LA.
Yeah. So I don't. It really depends, honestly. If that is going to happen, I don't think it'll be the people that got the 300 battery pack. I think it'll be the people who got maybe the people who got the 400 plus battery pack. But I think that if you're actually going to take it out, overlanding, off-roading, doing all that stuff, it really depends, man. It's such a unique market because it obviously is geared towards more of a luxury. I think it's geared slightly towards like a Range Rover buyer.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like luxury, mm-hmm. You got the power, you can go off-road, very similar in the fact like to a Defender where it's like fully independent, great articulation, all that stuff. I do know some off-road enthusiasts who are excited about it, but I think ultimately like taking it overlanding, that's really where it's going to be like probably a no-go depending on like how far out you go. And like how closely you can charge before going on your adventure. You know what I mean?
It all comes down to charging and availability. Yep. And we're taking one to Alaska, so we'll see if we can make it because there's no infrastructure. So
wish us luck. The long way up continues.
That's right. So I think we're going to pick up where they left off in the movie and finish off the Pan American Trail.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Hell yeah.
I mean, Rivian's pretty like proud of their upcoming charging infrastructure, and they've said like we're gonna put chargers at trailheads, like they want people to take these off-road.
Where we go off-road and there's no electricity.
Who's gonna upkeep those chargers though?
No, yeah. You're 100% correct.
They need a whole team dedicated to that for sure.
It's like saying you're gonna install them is one thing, and then installing them is one thing, and then actually upkeeping, which we've seen issues with other infrastructure.
There's only one company who understands charging, and it's Tesla. Yeah. Everyone else sucks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Point blank.
100%.
You want to hear the first thing? Because I remember so my dad has an F-350 dually. He does a bunch of he hauls like cattle, hay, whatever, so he like uses it pretty often back in Texas, and I was telling him about this truck, and you know, he had mentioned something about like charging it. He's like, how do you charge it? And I was like, oh well, you like plug it in, like, you know. He's like let's say I wanted to tow with it. He's like, where do I charge? And I was like, well, you charge in one of the spots. He's like, do I have to pull in every time? Or can I like pull up to the side? And I was like, oh shoot, I can't think of one. Like, if I had a trailer where I wouldn't have to like go into a Walmart parking lot and unhook my trailer.
Yep.
And pull the back the truck in, or actually with the Rivian, you have to pull it forward because it's in the front, right?
Yep. The problems go on and on and on. So trailering is one of them. There are site designs that do have pull throughs at, I'd say,
a couple,
10% of the locations or less. The other thing that I think we really need to focus on are two things. One is ADA compliant chargers. So people with disabilities being able to move around and get the chargers physically connected to the vehicles. In the wintertime, Forrest, because you live in warm climates, I don't know if you've experienced this, but here in Colorado and even where Mike is to an extent, some days in North Carolina, these cables literally freeze and you need like two hands to muscle them into the car.
I mean, the EA cables are so thick.
Yeah. Like. And then Tesla gets away with way more current at lower voltage and they're little noodles. So I don't know how they do that, you know, and they're great. But then the other thing is charging station safety, which is you're literally locked to a charger in the middle of the night, potentially, usually at a Walmart, which maybe isn't the safest place in town, in a $170,000 Lucid or $200,000 Taycan. And there's nothing you can do to unplug and pull away if you get, you know, run up on. So
I agree. That's the part that is jaw dropping to me. Even if you're in like a Mach-E, which is pretty much more expensive than most vehicles you'll see at a Walmart. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why didn't y'all at least partner with Target?
Yeah. And so we should go into this, but this type of like charging station safety is going to be a huge deal. Charging with you know, sort of bike racks or towing and even larger vehicles is going to be a big deal. And then just even before we get there, can the chargers even work? And right now it's like my dad's been driving electric cars for years and he's on his third ID4 and he calls me the other day. He's like, Kyle, I can't charge at Electrify America. Why? I'm like, I don't know, but like we've been doing this for years. Yeah. And so for me, I love electric cars because it's the Wild West. We're playing around with it. We're making videos, driving them across the country. I don't think I would feel comfortable recommending a battery electric vehicle to a person who isn't ready for that level of adventure today at all. And honestly, right now is the best time to own an EV because charging stations are going to get fuller and fuller, and there's zero incentive for them to put more stations in. They lose money every time you plug in.
Yeah.
So we got a lot of problems to work on here.
Yeah. Honestly, I think the best EV are the two. Honestly, if I just narrowed it down to one, if I said, hey, here's like the best EV to get right now that won't require a ton of changing your lifestyle around, I think it would specifically be Model 3 long range.
Yep. I mean, great car. Or Model Y, same thing.
Long range, for sure. Long range, anything.
Would you like more whiskey?
Yeah. You described it as a
didn't even offer it to us. Car.
You know.
There you go, guys. Over email. I think ID4 is a great car, by the way. I love the ID4. I love recommending the ID4 for someone who would take the occasional road trip, who's pretty tech savvy, and then does most of their charging at home. It's so, like the perfect RAV4 replacement.
So let's talk about this EV shootout we just did. And Forrest, I'd be curious to get your thoughts on like what you'd pick, because this was our lineup this weekend, and we basically filmed. So for our listeners, it's a Model Y. So they're the same, roughly the same spec of all these cars.
Like, well, here was the big deal for me. We've done comparisons before, and it's like Model Y performance versus Mach-E rear-wheel drive. And it's like, yeah, they're competing cars, but you know, it's and
yeah, not really.
You know this too, especially where you are. It's so hard to get the correct configurations of the cars. You know, you can get a X car, thank you very much, but is it the one you want? So here they were all the long range, so big battery pack, non-performance, but dual motor. I think like the most popular versions.
Yeah, for sure. So Polestar, dual motor, that's like 240, 250, something like that.
Yeah. So 233 mile range and 400 horsepower. Mm-hmm. But this one had the performance pack, which doesn't change power or range actually, but does give it the bigger wheels and cool brakes and Öhlin suspension.
And the seat belts, the gold seat belts, the best gold reason to buy it.
Mike,
and
I was trying to avoid the performance enhancements here. That gives it an extra 200 horsepower.
So, for our audio listeners, it's a long-range Model Y, the Volkswagen ID.4 Pro S, the Polestar 2, and the Mustang Mach-E. In this case, it was the, first edition? Mm-hmm. But essentially,
4X, all-wheel drive, long-range.
So that's the lineup we kind of compared against each other. I mean, kind of the outlier was the Polestar. It's not exactly like a crossover.
I really wanted XC40 Recharge, but they said, we don't have one. We have a Polestar. I said, same thing. We'll take it.
Thanks. Yeah. So space aside, it was a pretty good comparison.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Which would you pick for us, just without hearing about it? What appeals to you most here?
Oh, that is a very hard question. So I haven't driven the all-wheel ID.4. So this is just based off of the fact that I have not driven that car yet. So I can't really speak.
Mm-hmm.
It would be down between the Model Y long range or the Mach-E, at which point, for my money, and I was actually going out to buy one today, I'd probably say Mach-E.
Really?
Interesting. Mike, what would you go for?
I don't know. Just because I think from what I've seen, real world range seems to be pretty close to EPA.
Yeah. Oh, Mach-E does super close to EPA.
But then you said the whole like thermal thing, and now I'm like, oh, maybe that's not a good
it's charging. So like range is one side of the equation, but then charging is the exact, the other side, because most people charge at home. So the only time range matters is on a road trip. And like, at least for me, road trips are like, we're going somewhere. So it's how quickly can I recharge to where it starts to slow down? And then what's the distance I can get to the next charger once it's tapered off of max? And this is where Model Y does a really good job charging to 50%. ID.4 does a really good job charging to 50%. Polestar on the software I've tested so far does a really terrible job at this. But I hear the new software is better. But again, we haven't experienced it. It wasn't on the cars we had, so we can't speak to it. And Mach-E is pretty not great at this either. So
yeah, I do remember Mach-E being pretty slow. But then I have this question, right? How many people are going to be focused on the fact that Mach-E still has like federal tax credits available, and then like,
oh, there will definitely be people who will for sure.
But then again, the ID.4 does as well.
They all do except for the Tesla.
Yeah. Okay. So three of the four do. The Tesla is the only one who doesn't for now. That could change in the future. But
the ID.4 also comes with 3 years of free charging?
So here's the best part. The ID.4 was $7,000 less than the next most expensive competitor. So it was $7,000 less than the next cheapest car, and it gets the $7,500 tax credit, which most of them do, and it gets 3 years of free charging at EA.
And it's maxed out.
And that's right. It had every option.
That was the highest end.
And you could ID.4. Save like another $10,000 if you get a base one. So it's just an insane value.
That is a pretty solid value.
If I had to choose, I've not driven the Mach-E. That's the only one there I've not driven. I've actually driven a Polestar because I went to a test drive event that they had. And I've driven a ID.4 and it was fine. And I've spent plenty of time in Teslas. I know how they drive. I know the charging on it is awful, but I would take the Polestar too, just because I absolutely love sitting in that car. It's unique. It has, the materials are great, and they get 2 years of charging on Electrify America now.
Yeah, but Mike, this car is so stiff that it literally rattled itself to bits.
Yeah, well, I didn't have that one.
I'm just saying.
I don't know if I'd get the performance pack one, but
yo, you couldn't get one without the performance pack.
Yeah, only in suspension. As long as it's a long range. I wouldn't do a rear wheel drive. That's stupid, but
put suspension.
The ID4 just I didn't enjoy driving at all. Like it was just it was fine. It was just it reminded me of just like a car. I mean, which is good. That's what you want.
Kind of the point.
I mean, I know, but I would prefer to have a Polestar because it just I love the way it looks and it's more unique in my opinion.
Yeah,
it's hard for me to justify. So looks wise, I do like the Mach-E, but
that thing is not a pretty car. I'm sorry.
I like
it's not a looker.
But it's like the Mach-E versus ID4. I feel like ID4 is like basically just as quick, maybe not quite. It just feels it was a nicer place to sit for me. I like the infotainment a little more.
And you sit so low in it. The Mach-E, you sit like up on a freaking van.
The ID4 charging, like and the Mustang Mach-E falls apart when you try to do performance. So it's like if you're not getting a performance car, I wouldn't pick Mach-E. I would just pick ID4 because I'm not interested in performance anyways. Although I had a lot of fun hooning the ID4 in the canyons, even though it was just, you know, ID4.
For a lot of people, though, the Tesla is the only option from a charging standpoint.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't even consider the other cars because of the supercharging.
I went back and forth a lot. Like in our video, I officially said I would choose Polestar 2. That may still be true because I'm obsessed with looks and also interior. And so, but like in my head, the logical part is like, I just want the Model Y because I love the Easter eggs. I love the charging and I love the performance.
Yeah, you were hitting the fart noises the whole time in the car.
So it's like I would
target take audience model, right there.
If money were no object, I'd take a Model Y and then put a Polestar exterior and interior on it, call it a day.
Interesting final conclusion there.
Yeah.
You know what's funny though? Like down here, at least where I am in like near like Laguna Beach area, OC, there are an absurd amount of ID4s running around.
Really?
Dude, they're everywhere.
I hardly see them here.
That's
really
crazy. I see them. I saw them like
once
four
a
times
week
on one drive yesterday.
Yeah, they're here now. Mike, that's
there's
wild.
Teslas everywhere. No, hardly any. Yesterday, Ben and I saw one and I couldn't determine what trim it was. It had the black stripe going down the side, not the silver one, but it had the good headlights.
Right. So it's a Pro S non-gradient.
Okay, that's what I thought because it had small-ish wheels.
Yeah,
I was
they
like,
had
I'm
the 19s.
It looked a lot better than that silver stripe, I think.
Yeah, but that's what my dad has. Yeah.
Dude, I actually like smaller wheels, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too, good. Yeah.
I think they look sharp. I think they look better than the bigger ones, and
so
you're saving them range.
Drew at Martian Wheels just created an ID4 forged wheel specific for that car, and it looks so hot.
Oh,
so nice. Can't wait to get that on.
I did see a picture of an ID4 that's been slammed on like RSQ 21. ID4. Yeah. Oh my gosh, that looks so good.
So good. That's the thing. ID4 is the only car I'm like, bag it and big ass wheels. But I wish we could get ID3 here.
Yeah, ID3. And okay, what do you think about? Do you think we'll get the, was it called the GTX?
No, so it's the same exact thing we get just with a lower ride height.
What do you mean?
Yeah, ID4 all-wheel drive and GTX are identical. It's just we get the lifted suspension and they get the lowered suspension.
So just lower it.
There's no difference other than they get badging and seats.
Is that the one with the cool taillights?
So the cool taillights are on almost every Euro version, but they're not FMVSS compliant, so it'll never come here.
I hate
it. Our lighting laws is up.
Like we get the big brakes from the GTX. Like all-wheel drive is kind of a hodgepodge of the normal car with some bits from the GTX with a bespoke suspension for our market. And
interesting.
But our all-wheel drive has stiffer suspension. It's 0.6 inches higher, but it's got a thicker rear sway bar, increased spring rate, and a stiffer damper. So like shredding the all-wheel drive around today, like Timon and I did our full performance evaluation on it today, and we were full on hooning this thing like sideways out of corners, and it was incredible. Not crazy fast, not crazy like sporty, but like the Germans know how to build a car that could just be flung around, and it's so competent. It's so
predictable.
Okay, so predictable. This is the all-wheel drive ID4 you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Dude, I haven't driven it. Like, I
so good.
I had so much fun.
Rear wheel, and I wasn't super impressed with it.
No, yeah, I've only driven the rear wheel,
and it has a weird brake pedal. They all have a weird brake pedal, mm-hmm. So you got to get over that. You got to drive it B mode. I actually like driving the cars in comfort mode the best. But so the way the all-wheel drive ID4 works, first off, there's two intricacies. The first is, which I actually think is like a really big problem that we need to talk about. Every EV is slower at lower state of charge. When you have higher pack voltage for the same current request, you have more total power output. That's why when these people do EV drag races, like half of them are wrong, because it's like, that's a cold car you pulled off a truck and it's at 30% state of charge. It needs to be hot and 100% state of charge for it to rip the hardest. It's the only way to get max performance. But the ID4 it has like a noticeable drop at 85% state of charge, where it kind of gives you everything. And then at 85%, it's like locks you at 75% of the power. And the Q4 e-tron was the same way when I drove it too. And the Q4 e-tron messaging, I thought, was better than Volkswagen. The Q4 e-tron says, pretty much until you're below 20% state of charge, you get 100% power output. Your boost functionality is available when it's near full. In the ID4, it just shows that you never can get to full power on the display. Mm-hmm. And because Volkswagen recommends charging it to 80% every day, how can they advertise the 300 horsepower number if they're also saying don't ever charge it up beyond 80%? So this is quite an interesting world that we're living in. I think the system should be software tuned to allow 300 horsepower, which really isn't that much. We're talking like 200 something kilowatts, 230 kilowatts output. It's not that hard on a 77 kilowatt hour usable pack. Let that down to about 30%, then start to ramp down would be the smart way to do it. The second intricacy with ID4 all-wheel drive is its permanent magnet rear motor and SRI motor up front. So an induction motor up front, which means for efficiency, it's the exact same driving experience as rear wheel drive under light load, just uses the rear motor. The front stays off. And that's why EPA is only a 9 or 10 mile difference, because it's just the weight difference between the rear and the front. But when you roll into the throttle, then the front motor kicks on. This is like an awesome tuning situation, because you get no electrical noise from the front motor cruising around. It's just as quiet as the rear wheel. And then when you stand on it, wakes up and goes, and there's no lag. And so I was impressed with that dual motor calibration.
I need to drive that one. So that's the so only good. New, I mean, other than Lucid and Rivian, like that's one of the only newer ones.
What about EV6 and Ioniq 5? Have you had a go in those?
Ioniq 5, I'm getting during Christmas, because every year my wife and I drive from here to Texas, and they're letting me drive it from
California.
That's amazing.
Texas. Yeah.
Road trip. Hell nice. Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be exciting to see how the Ioniq 5 does. I mean, there's lots of videos of, you know, people in like Europe and stuff testing it, but I'd be curious to test US spec, even though there's really not any differences.
Well, we have a different battery chemistry, so our charging curves are going to be different.
That'll be interesting. Also, going back to that whole subject of like car enthusiast EVs, I'm super curious how the EV6 GT will be, especially since they have like Albert Bierman as their like special tool in the fleet, you know?
Yep.
I know he's got to have some tuning going on with that EV6 GT.
Yeah, well, even the standard one drives amazing. So I drove a Euro spec when I was over in Germany for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And I was like full on sideways around on ramps. Like this thing was so hot.
Yeah.
And it just, from a technology standpoint, blows away everything. Look, as much as I love ID4 and I keep talking about how good this all wheel drive is, when you start factoring all this 800 volt tech, which 800 volts isn't really a big deal. It's kind of a tagline, but it does allow for some interesting charging stuff and power output things. Like EV6 is a freaking shredder of a car, like so good and charges so fast. 0 to 50% in 10 minutes. It's insane.
That's crazy.
That would honestly be my pick if it were out. If you would have shown me that same picture and EV6 was in there or Ioniq 5, whatever. I mean, I'd probably go with EV6 though, because it looks cooler.
I agree. I like the EV6 more, and I know
I do appreciate that the Ioniq 5 has that like Lancia type look.
Yes, I like the Ioniq 80s 5.
Look.
But I think I don't know, from the only angles I like it from is the front. I don't really like the back, and I don't really like the side.
So we can all agree that the Genesis GV60 is the only one you don't buy for the look.
Well, it's the only one that doesn't fit with the brand image. It's so weird. Forrest, you've done a lot of Genesis products. I've watched your GV70 stuff. I've seen some of the things you've done. Yeah. What is your opinion of GV60 Electric fitting in with the Genesis brand image? Because it's such a departure from the amazing presence that we've had over the last few years.
The most disappointing thing about GV60 is definitely the looks. I think I think the GV70 is probably the most beautiful one they make. I think it takes their design language and like just fits it perfectly on the
car. And those wheels are insanely cool.
Yes.
Dude. So when I saw GV60, I was like mega disappointed, dude.
And in highlighter yellow, like how does that fit with the Genesis premium brand image?
I don't know. Like honestly though, I just think it just looks ugly because the car is not that attractive. I think if it were like some beautiful car with that color, I wouldn't mind it. It wouldn't be that big of a deal. It's like taking some trash and painting it purple. It just looks like purple trash.
Wait, let's just take that as a soundbite. We'll upload that as a clip. Taurus will never drive another Genesis again.
This was a setup.
I think the interior actually looks fantastic, but yeah, it's the exterior that just like kills me.
Yeah, the interior is so cool with that crystal ball shifter thing that flips around.
Genesis interiors blow my mind, and even the exteriors.
What's
of
the
everything...
one that you had for a little while? You had one.
It was a G80.
G80. Yeah, and that thing rolling down the road, I was like, let me just pull over and let you go by. Excuse me, sir.
Fantastic spec, and it wasn't even the big engine, and I was still happy with it.
And it wasn't even the big one because you could get a GV80, or is there a 90? Anyway, the big SUV, GV80, is like, that's one you're like, holy crap, let me get out of your way.
Yeah.
The grill is just massive.
Yeah.
You know, every time I see a GV70 on the road, I'm doing a double take. Like, they really do look fantastic.
They do. I mean, yeah, so the electric car world's interesting. Forrest, next year, why don't you join us? We're going to do a big EV comparison, a few of them for different segments.
Yeah.
But at least join us for the SUV one because we'll have so many cars because Ioniq 5 and EV6 will be in there. We'll get them all together. We'll do a 5-day testing program. This one we did in like 6 hours, 8 hours. Yeah. next year we're going to go into it and then we'll give an award to the automaker who wins or something like that.
Dude, yeah. And if you need any, like, I don't know if you need any like investments or investing with anything for that, but let me know. I'd be more than happy to help out because I think that stuff is super cool.
Yeah, thanks. We'll come up with a budget for it. We'll be fine. But that's what I love to do. I think from a business perspective, it's what drives the views and it's worth it to actually. I mean, the biggest thing was for me and my good friend Drew, who owns Martian Wheels, who's making those ID4 wheels, who makes Tesla wheels. He's an amazing driver. So we got in and out of each car back to back and did a performance drive in them. And while I had an idea in my head, because I remember what they drive like, nothing can beat getting out of a car and into the next one and then into the next one and feeling that minutia back to back. And honestly, getting out of, so we went in order of ID4, Mach-E, Model Y, Polestar 2, kind of raising the bar each time. And it's kind of hard to pick a clear winner, but it's easy to pick a clear loser, which was the Mach-E. We were so disappointed with the way that car drove on the back road. But then.
Oh, I can agree with that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, GT solves all that problems. Yeah. But I thought it was interesting that Mach-E 4X was worse than ID4 all-wheel drive for us.
Yeah, I think Mach-E, I just think with the Mustang badging, there's a level of performance that you expect even on a base model vehicle. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't deliver. Like it was a fine EV.
Yeah, it's a great daily car.
I think the Mach-E GT is the only one that actually justifies it having a Mustang badge.
Totally agree.
Yeah, they're diluting the Mustang name. I mean, the Mustang like EcoBoost is not the most impressive car either, but at least it looks.
And
like
you can slide it. You can't even turn ESP off in the Mustang. It's supposed to go through.
That's what I was going to say. You can still drive an EcoBoost Mustang and feel like you're driving a sports car.
Yeah, I didn't put it on video, but I did find a big open parking lot and do some pretty wicked donuts in the Mach-E GT.
Oh, nice. Oh, I
know. And it does like really well.
Oh, that's well, in the GT, you can go full stability advanced track off.
Yeah, you can there's like a physical button you can like hold it turned off. And dude, that thing can like slide around.
Yes. Oh, it's great at that. So here's the thing. If you buy an early production Mach-E, I think it's same model year two, you can only go traction control off in the UI, and there's no way to turn advanced track off. But now all current production Mach-E, including rear-wheel drive, including base cars, have the button that the GT has, which means now you can go full off. So I haven't driven a non-GT with the button, but I'm really looking forward to doing a rear-wheel drive that I can go advanced track off and doing big skids.
Yeah.
Interesting. Then if you're going to do that, man, you got to make sure they got that good thermal management going
That's
on.
That's right.
Yeah.
We'll park it over ice bricks. We'll just put it on a cooler full of ice, try and cool it down.
Yeah. That's funny, yeah. Man. Yeah, I think other than that, I'm trying to think what other vehicle I'm excited for. Because honestly, most cars I get excited for now, like, it's weird, within a year, most of them, like 75% of them are EVs.
Really?
I mean, other than the new Z06, like obviously that's super excited to drive that. And then you have things like the upcoming Bronco R.
Yep.
And Motor Trend just posted something of like the, what'd I say? Not Bronco R. Yeah.
The Bronco R is the dune buggy non-street legal thing. But crazy.
Yeah, no. Well, the Bronco Raptor.
Yeah. The Warthog thing that Motor Trend posted today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a spy shot of it or something.
That's going to be pretty good. Interesting.
I think the fender flares are actually a bit too much. They're way too massive, I think. But.
So, Forrest, like, what's a non-EV that really excited you that you already drove this year?
I was about to say something, but I have not already driven.
What were you going to say?
Yeah,
to say the new Z06. Like, that's But okay.
Oh, yeah, that car.
I have to look back because I feel like...
So you have a list of every car you've had this year?
I just did all my TikTok videos because the videos, I don't have to spend like hours getting footage because it's like they're minute long videos. So yeah. I can get like 3 to 4 cars in a week. And so it all kind of blends together after a while.
Do you do that many cars? So what's your rotation like with the fleet companies?
It's pretty much at least 2 a week.
Yeah. Well, we do 2 to 3 a week here. Yeah. But do you keep them both at the same time or do you take one, then send it back? Take another.
I will usually keep them for like a full week each.
Yeah.
Just because if I rotate too often, I feel like I'll run out of content pretty quickly.
We will in Colorado very quickly.
In Colorado, yeah.
I feel like there's a fine balance. You can take on a lot, but you don't want to take on too much. And plus the fleet companies, I feel like would be super annoyed if I was like, all right, I'm done. Come pick it up.
They like a week to just get their drivers there and back. And do you have all of the old guys driving your cars around when they drop them off?
It's a lot of younger guys. I think they just got a bunch of new people working there, but it's been a bunch of younger people.
Like 75-year-olds. They're the best. I love every single one of them. They're like, they could all be my grandfather.
There's like one or two guys out here that are old, but
yeah,
he was so happy. He picked up the S class and dropped off the JCW, and he was so glad. He felt like he made the best decision ever.
I bet.
Yeah, when they dropped off the S, because they dropped it off here, and then they picked it up from you, and they were like, "Wow, we just took it around the block one extra time."
Dude, that's so funny, man. I'm looking
through. Do you just do TikToks with them? So what's your, when you get a car, what is like your content plan? Is it to make a YouTube video? Is it to do TikTok? Is it what do you do when you get a car dropped off?
I literally, they drop it off. The first day I'll just run my normal everyday errands in that vehicle. And that's like the first day or two. And that's kind of like how I kind of get acquainted with it. Kyle, like once you've driven a lot of cars, it's pretty quick turnaround in terms of getting to know a vehicle. Like
10 minutes, you're good.
Yeah. You don't need much time. But sometimes within those 2 days, there will be like a little detail or a little feature that the car has that maybe enhances the way I interact with it, or maybe it completely takes away from how I interact with it. So I love to find those things because if there's a feature that, let's say, other cars have, but this one implements it the best or whatever. But my whole goal is to, because it's 60 seconds, so I can't give like a full.
What about those 3-minute TikToks? Do you ever do those?
They just don't do well.
Yeah,
not that's what on, I found. On social media. Because on the whole thing is like with YouTube, right? The biggest difference is someone goes on YouTube and they type in Mustang Mach-E. So that means they are looking for that car and they're looking for that content. And they probably already know a little bit about the vehicle. And it's probably something they're considering. And it's on their list of things to buy. Or maybe they just want to know what it's like. So they're looking at your video in a more – in like they're looking for that detail and information.
Yeah, whereas, like if I post an hour-long video, it will significantly outperform a 59-minute video.
Oh, yeah, dude. Especially because like the way your videos are structured too and people that know your videos, like that to them that means more detail.
Yep.
It's the opposite.
And TikTok is the opposite.
Complete opposite. So with me, the shorter I can make it, the better. But the big trick is if it goes shorter, I have to get the meat and potatoes of the car. And I have to just keep simmering it down and simmering it down and simmering it down until I can somehow get across the main highlights and the main aspects of the vehicle in the most efficient way possible. So sometimes like when I'm doing my takes, if I have like one or two words, like if I say and like three times, I'll cut out an and, or like I'll cut out like a three word sentence and try to get those three words and sum it up into one word.
Wow.
Like it's literally that compressed. And so now it's funny because I just stuck with the name Force Auto Reviews because that's what I've been since I was on YouTube. Right. But it's not even like reviews anymore. It's more like, the best way I can explain it now is it's like me doing just quick overviews of cars.
So why not, I guess how do you quantify the value of a TikTok view versus a YouTube view? It's still a person watching a video about a car that could be anyone who's using a device.
Yeah.
So and the views on TikTok, look, we got on TikTok and like sporadically used it, but went from like 0 to 100,000 followers in like way fast. Obviously, we don't have any YouTube channels with 100,000 followers. So it just was way bigger numbers for us so much more quickly.
But yeah.
Are they as valuable as YouTube numbers? What do you think?
It depends. Yes and no. So I think YouTube, if you had a video that did like 500,000, you probably have a bigger percentage of people. Like let's say you had 500,000 views on a Mach-E GT, right? And there's probably a bigger percentage of that 500,000 that if the review is positive, you've probably just secured them buying a Mach-E GT.
Agreed.
But with TikTok, you have way more exposure, right? So like, okay, example, dude, I just did the Grand Wagoneer and it's at 7 million views.
Yep. No one didn't see that.
It's ridiculous, right? And so even though you won't have 10 million of those people buying a Grand Wagoneer, I would still say the percentage of people that may have bought a Wagoneer is probably like the amount of people is probably still close to what a 500,000 video that saw like 50% people buy a car. It's just all a numbers game. You just see more exposure, right? But the biggest benefit with more exposure is you can push more people to YouTube, right? So
yeah, I mean my whole thing is if a view's a view, that's a person seeing the car going through, I count it. I think it's all people. Kids, you know, maybe if TikTok is a younger overall audience than YouTube, probably not by much, but I'm sure there is. But kids influence buying decisions massively. They'll go, "Mom, I saw Forrest's Grand Wagoneer video. It had the, you know, the flags the right way, it had all the stuff going on. And you know what? That's a cool car." Maybe then she'll go, "Oh, I'll go check out a YouTube video." And so to me, a view's a view, no matter who's watching it, no matter how long the content is. And for us, that mindset has shifted into us making 3 TikToks a day now, in addition to the YouTube stuff, because maybe we're not as polished as definitely not as polished as you on TikTok, but more so than I would say your average other car reviewer there. And for us, we can get a, you know, 30 to 60 second video out. And then maybe like if a half a percent of the people ever click through and look at our YouTube channel, that's a win.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's my biggest tip with TikTok. Never follow any trends unless you are a content creator who you do like trendy stuff, which we are not that.
Nope.
Right?
I've never tried it. Trends.
I never do anything related to trends. I just do my thing. You do your thing and you do it the way that only you can do it. And then
you think people hashtags make a difference?
Yeah, people love that because there's only one me in the world. There's only so like I would like no one can review a car the way or no one could go over a car the way I would go over a car because I'm Forrest, right? Yep. I can't talk about an EV the way you would talk about an EV because you're Kyle.
Right.
And you're crazy when you talk about these EVs sometimes because I'm just like, how is he regurgitating all this information? So like that's just such a unique thing to you and no one else can replicate that. So just be unapologetically like yourself. And when you make the TikTok videos, you're not aiming to like, don't create it as if you're aiming to a younger crowd because you will be surprised at how many older people, like so many, and like families and stuff are on there. It's crazy. So my biggest thing is just when you make your video, when you watch it back, if there's any moment of the video that you find to be like boring, or if you find yourself like thinking about anything else, cut it out.
Mm, that's a great tip.
So just really make your video just entertaining all the way through, which in theory should be easy because they're a minute long versus making an hour long video. You know what I mean?
That's a really good tip. Here's what we're doing, and not to derail, I know we're already at an hour, but we take a TikTok, then we save that TikTok, throw it on Snapchat, Spotlight, YouTube Short, and Instagram Reel. Do you do that?
Sometimes I try not to, but I found what does best is this does require a little bit more work, but if you can make if you can make exclusive content for each platform, do.
So what's the difference though? Because we can get the non-watermarked version, right? So we download through SnapTik or one of these things, the non-watermark looks like it's made there. What would be different about content for YouTube Shorts versus Snapchat, Spotlight versus some TikToks? Do you think?
I'd say just different aspects of the car, different features of the car. Or I don't know, man. It's tough because they're all kind of similar. I don't do YouTube Shorts at all because I just don't think it does well on the YouTube platform. I think YouTube really does well with like what you're doing right now. I think that's what does well on YouTube.
We have a separate shorts channel that we just throw stuff up. Some things have like hundreds of thousands of views. We'd never get paid from it, but at least it's just content that people are looking at.
Yeah, you could throw up there for more exposure, but unless YouTube does something drastically different with shorts, I don't think it's going to like take off like Reels is taking off on Instagram because it can hold a little bit higher quality on the videos. Like it doesn't downgrade it as much as TikTok does, but TikTok's still getting better at that. I think with TikTok, you really just want it to be entertaining, but not in an entertainment sort of way, but entertaining in the sense of like, oh, I just gathered quick information from this video.
So not to get super nerdy about our business, but this is my last thing because I know we're really running out of time. It's so interesting. Forrest, you and I get to talk to a lot of PR reps at automakers, but also engineers, et cetera. And we talk about TikTok all the time. I'm so curious about how they, again, this whole conversation of valuing a view. For me, it's a numbers game, right? We have a business with 20 people who work for us. I want to make sure we're, providing the best value we can to keep getting the best cars possible to produce content on. We bring up TikTok all the time. You're always the first name that comes up to every automaker's like, well, Forrest did X with our car and got this many views. It was incredible. So what is your relationship like in general when you receive a car, when you talk to PR about TikTok? Because you are the first, I would say, person who's really reviewing cars in some cases exclusively for TikTok, which automakers have never loaned cars for that platform before. So was this hard for you to convince them? Because you already had your YouTube presence. So how did this transition go for you to be like, guys, no, I just like took the new Nissan Rogue, whatever it is, and got you like 200 million views and you would have never got anything like that on YouTube. So how did that go?
That was interesting. So yeah, it first started with a Mercedes-Benz, which Mercedes-Benz was actually the hardest to convince. It was just, I happened to have a Mercedes-Benz that I filmed, and it happened to do like 2 million views on TikTok. That's what first made me say, wow, that's more than anything I've ever gotten on YouTube.
You find that Mercedes do well on TikTok? Because we find they always do over a couple million views for us.
On TikTok?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. No, sorry, what I meant was Mercedes was the hardest one
to convince.
Get them to loan me cars just for TikTok. And they have the biggest presence on TikTok. They were the first automaker with a verified account. And they have the most views on their hashtag of any automaker. Mm. And I was like, how were y'all the last ones to say, okay, we'll send you cars specifically for TikTok? It was crazy. But anyway, that rant aside, Acura was the first one to send me a vehicle just for TikTok, and it was the NSX.
No way.
Yeah. So
you requested the car, though, for TikTok. Obviously, the fleet companies, they say, this is Forrest. He works with X number of outlets, but now he's just doing TikTok. Is that how that went?
Yeah. So I forgot what happened. I had a lot of people asking for the NSX on there. And I had already filmed it, but I filmed it for YouTube. So I reached out to Karina.
Yep.
And I was like, hey, is there any way I can get the NSX again for a loan? She's like, oh, are you just going to make more YouTube videos on that? I was like, actually, I just need it for a TikTok video. And she's like, oh. I was like, I know it's kind of like all new. I was like, but here's my numbers and here's what I've done so far. And she's like, oh, that's super interesting. She's like, sure, let's try it out. And I think the NSX did like, I made two videos on it. One did like 3.2, the other did like 1.5.
Wow. So they must have been thrilled.
Oh, they were like, oh, what the heck? Yeah. Type S event. Like, yeah, it was pretty crazy. And then I think then it just, I don't know, it's interesting how it works. I really can't explain how a lot of it works. Honestly, it just kind of does. I just kind of like do my thing and then it just does well. I wish there was more of a science or more of like a explanation of why it does well, but it's just...
You have a great way of connecting with the audience. I'm a huge fan. I watch every video you do. I'm super into it. It's so great. And honestly, you know, from our side, we don't strive to be like you. We don't strive to be like everyone. We obviously have to keep our own personal identity. But I think it's amazing that we can cover literally the exact opposites of car reviews, right? Me being hour plus detail oriented, every little thing rambling on, and you doing these very small, short highlights of vehicles, and they appeal to different types of people, but they're both providing value, I think. So it's pretty amazing, just to see the breadth of just the media world within the automotive organization.
Yeah, it is interesting because like my YouTube videos are like super in depth, like 25 minutes long, talking about all the stuff. And on social media, I do have to gear it slightly more towards like the general audience. So like I won't use too hardcore like car enthusiast words, or I won't go into, I can talk that stuff. I think because I've been doing this so long, a lot of new followers or a lot of people who have never seen me, but then they see me for the first time on TikTok, like, oh, this guy's not like a real car enthusiast. He's only talking about this. And he didn't mention anything about like the trans or whatever, but like most, unless it's like a unique transmission or unless it's like new to the car or whatever,
it's not that exciting to talk about.
Most people are like, they don't care. So like, I'm not going to say this, new Miata has a 13.1 compression and in Europe they have a 14.1 compression. Like no one except for car people care.
Right. Totally agree.
Give me just a second.
Sure.
It's my wife.
Mike, can we talk about your Cooper SE for a half a second? Actually, hold on. Before we get there, what are you doing with your GX?
We are keeping it for now. We just drove it to Asheville and back. I mean, I don't know if there's like a set plan with anything like to do with it. You never know. I mean, as with my day job, I have access to buying a couple cars a year, generally. So I'm not sure, what the full lifespan of that car is going to be at this point. But we do maybe still want to lift it or put a spacer lift on the front of it to kind of level it out, because GXs all kind of sit a little front heavy.
Yeah, but Timon sits pretty nice. It's got a leveling or a lift kit on
it. Well, I know his is like lifted with big 35s or 37s.
He was just working on it in the garage and got it all aligned. He put it back together, and then we went out for its test drive today, and the wheel's like this. And we're like, oh, that's not good.
That's a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. So we got it aligned, and then now it's all good. But man, 200 and something thousand miles, the thing feels brandy new. That V8 starts up like butter every single time. Yep. Such a good car. And
well-engineered.
Very well-engineered. Well, Forrest, thank you for coming on the show. Do we have anything else on the notes we want to talk about?
No. All right. Great.
Yeah. It's so nice to like connect and meet you. And
hopefully
we'll see you out in LA next time.
Yeah.
What are you doing for the auto show, by the way? You have with so many things going on around the LA Auto Show. Are you going to partake in any of it?
I don't know. I have a Honda Civic Si event, but I'm I hope no one from Honda is listening to this, but I'm debating if I should go or not. Like if I should sacrifice one car to get way more content at the LA Auto Show.
Yeah, you need to not do that, and you need to go to the LA. It's crazy that they would do a thing
right
around that.
Same time as LA. Yeah. It's weird. I may have
to. That is an interesting decision that they made.
Well, if you happen to go to the LA Auto Show, we have a whole schedule booked with some things that we could. I'm sure you can obviously get all of the whole invites, but we have a whole bunch of cool stuff lined up that you're more than welcome to tag along with if you want to do with like cool pre-pro cars and things like that. So it should be fun.
Yeah, well, I'll let you guys know. I may make that decision like this afternoon. I'll probably send out some not too pleasant emails.
Yeah.
Don't feel bad. But yeah, man, thank you guys for having me. It was great. I love, like I said, I love talking car stuff. Don't get to do it too much on TikTok just because, it's all kind of condensed. But
of course.
So it is nice to talk good old car stuff.
Nerdy car stuff.
Yeah. So, well, you're welcome back anytime.
When we're in LA, we have some fun cars that we're taking out. If you happen to be there and you're around, join us for some of the performance driving evaluations or nerdy things. And then people not on TikTok can get a sense of the depth of car knowledge that you are. It'd be kind of fun.
For sure, man. Yeah. Let me know. Cause I think Jordan's supposed to be staying with me anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hair match is ready. Yes. Make him sleep on the floor.
All right. Well, I'll wrap up the show. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. And check out all of our stuff, Out of Spec. Of course, Forrest is Forrest Auto Reviews. That's YouTube and TikTok.
We're really going to send so much traffic his
way. And Kyle is at It's Kyle Connor on Twitter. And I'm Jordan_Schieffer. And of course, Mike is M_Breely. Thanks for joining us on this long show, but it was awesome, full of stuff. And we'll see you guys next time.
Awesome. Bye, guys.